Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name's Michelle Cachette. I'm your co-host today, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle.
Well, today we're talking about marriage, but what in the world does marriage have to do with leadership?
Well, as it turns out, everything, because nothing will undermine your leadership, your effectiveness as a leader, faster than a bad marriage. Because it really demonstrates to the world and to the people you're trying to lead how you treat those who are closest to you. So if you don't have a good relationship with your spouse, it needs to be a priority because it's going to have an impact on your leadership.
Yeah, it will eventually, even if you think you're good at covering it up, it will eventually
spill
out.
People notice.
It spews out all over. But what about those listeners that are listening in today that are not married? Is this one of those episodes they should just tune out for, or is there a reason for them to stay connected?
No, I don't think so, because just because you're not married doesn't make you a second-class citizen, obviously.
Obviously, yes.
And,
very true.
And just because you're not married doesn't mean you don't need deep, personal, intimate relationships. Mm-hmm. And so even in my life, even though I've got a terrific marriage, Gail and I have been married for 36 years, I've got very close friends, and those relationships I intentionally try to cultivate because I need relationship. We were born for relationships. And when all we have is sort of these quasi relationships through social media or people that we're acquaintances with that we don't really go deep with, our lives are going to be just poorer for that. And if we want to have a rich, developed, healthy life, in fact, the science shows that even the quality of our relationship impacts our health. So even if we're not married.
No, I believe that. I really do believe that.
We need these close relationships.
It's so true. So today we're talking about how you can become your spouse's best friend. So it's really, the focus today is really on how you can do what you need to do to become the kind of person that would serve your spouse.
That's right.
So it's really going to be an other person kind of focused episode. However, we live in a very me-centric society, which
Absolutely.
You know, right? So we're all about, and we hear this constantly, about standing up for our own rights and getting our own needs met. Have you seen this mindset impacting the marriages and thus an organization as a whole, this kind of me mindset?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is like a doom loop or, to use Emerson Eggerich's statement, a crazy cycle. When we're so focused on our own needs and being heard, and believe me, I am not against voicing your own needs. I think it's important in any healthy relationship to be able to say what you need, to be able to give voice to that and express it.
True.
But when that becomes your exclusive point of view, and when it becomes your focus, then it's detrimental to those relationships. Because if you have two people who are each focused on their own needs, they're never going to meet in the middle. The only way to solve that is when you try to find out what the other person needs and be committed in an attitude of service to meet those needs. So you've got to identify them, and then you've got to work hard to try to meet those needs. And when we do that consistently over time, that's what builds a relationship.
Yes. You know, if we're both really setting out to meet the other person's needs, if we're both so committed to that, then everybody's covered, right?
That's right.
But the truth is somebody has to go first. And that always feels a little bit risky to be the one to go first and to do that, because then you start to worry, okay, what if my needs don't get met?
Yeah, but here's the thing. That's one of the primary characteristics of an effective leader, is that in fact, I've written about this before and speak on it, authentic leaders is the term I use. The first attribute or characteristic of authentic leaders is that they take initiative. So it means that you go first. It means that you don't wait to react. It means that you can't use the other person as an excuse. It means you take the initiative. Before you ask, before somebody says something to you, you take the initiative. It's a mark of leadership, and we might as well learn it in our homes, because we're going to need it in our work and in everything else we do.
You know, sometimes this kind of mindset, and we've sort of you kind of mentioned this, this mindset of getting our own needs met, and I'm with you in that you're absolutely, you should voice your needs and communicate, but it's kind of a slippery slope. So I don't intentionally set out to be self-serving, but it seems like I can easily slip into that cycle and get down the road, and I need something to kind of stop me and get me back into that servant mindset. I'm assuming you've had some similar moments like that.
Absolutely. And I still slip into that. And when I slip into it is when I'm tired, I tend to get selfish. When I've been hurt, you know, something's happened, may not even have been the result of my relationship with Gail, but maybe I've had a setback at work or something I'm facing that's particularly challenging or something that assails my self-esteem, you know, then I'm more likely to be me-focused. And that's detrimental to the relationship. I mean, think of, you probably had this experience where you snap at your spouse.
Oh,
anger.
Well, not today, but again, I am like 1,000 miles from home, so I haven't snapped at him today.
Yeah, so you snap and it just seems so out of context, out of character, and the other person is left a little bewildered because it's like, whoa.
Where did that come from?
Yes. What did I do? And then, you know, when we have the best version of ourselves or hopefully a lot of equity in our relationship bank, you know, we're able to say, you know what, I'm so sorry. That really had nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm, I'm just really stressed out, or I had this thing happen at the office or whatever. But to be aware of that is important.
It makes me think of the HALT acronym, the hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay.
Where'd you get that?
I think my friend Ken Davis told me about it. I don't know who's the original source. I'm sure there's somebody that's the original source of that.
I'm totally stealing that.
But when the HALT acronym, if you are hungry, angry, lonely, tired, that puts you in a position to not be your best self. And that's usually when you start to unravel or snap or you're getting close to burnout. And so to be aware of that, sometimes it's as simple as getting yourself a good meal or taking a nap or getting a good night's sleep or resolving.
Are there situations for you where you kind of, you move into that red zone?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Like what are the triggers for you?
So my big red zone, and this is one that we've had to deal with a lot this fall, is I've been traveling every single week.
You're grinning and nodding,
so you totally understand. Traveling every week, and when I travel, I have to be on, you know, when I'm speaking and I'm meeting people. And so every Friday through Sunday, I've been traveling this fall, sometimes twice a week. So I'm on. And then traveling itself, just the going to an airport and everything is so exhausting as well. Mm-hmm. So I get home and have to launch right into mothering and a lot of children and a husband and doing all of that.
No real downtime.
No downtime. So I literally come home kind of hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I mean, not angry, but it's a frustrating. Traveling is frustrating. So I found that there's a little bit of all of those things when I walk in the door. So that first 24 hours after I come home can be nuclear if I'm not careful.
Well, the good thing about you being able to articulate that and share that with Troy is that if you both know that, it doesn't totally smooth it over because you forget in the moment.
Yes.
But to know that and to give one another space is really helpful. Now, I'm in a different season of life than you are. In fact, you're looping back through a season you'd already lived previously now that you've got these small children that have moved in with you. But seriously, you know, one of the things that I try to do, again, different season, not everybody can do this, but when I travel, on the back end of that travel, I try to book some downtime so that I've just got some time before I have to re-enter. Mm-hmm. And it's a luxury, I realize that, but to re-enter all the demands of my normal life. And if I don't build that kind of re-entry time in, then I get into this HALT thing and it's going to be easier for me to react rather than be proactive.
Totally. In fact, I'm surprised because even if I have good intentions, if I'm in that HALT phase, I mean, it takes nothing to push me over the edge.
Really?
I mean, it's just so easy. So I really have to.
It's like a powder keg.
It really is.
Yeah, dry powder that.
And I've learned. So what I do when I arrive home on Sunday is I usually block out till Tuesday morning. So all day Monday, I try to do nothing, no work, no blogging, because I really need that buffer window in order to be my best self. Otherwise, I'm not doing any favors to my family.
Okay, so this not entirely related to this, but in that situation, I suspect a lot of our listeners get in this situation. What are the kinds of things that restore your soul and get you out of that HALT mode? I mean, obviously, you could eat.
Yeah,
that solves the hunger one.
Rest. I mean, a huge. Sleep. I need sleep. I'm not somebody that can function with 4, 5, 6 hours of sleep. I mean, I need a good 9 hours a night. And so, when I'm coming back from this, not only did I need a good night's sleep, but I usually take a nap the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, I have just learned that I need a lot of sleep. The other is quiet. Since I'm out on the road so much and I'm in kind of high stimulus environments, and then my family when they're all home, it's very high stimulus environment. I really need silence.
And you're an introvert.
I really am. I mean, I'm like that borderline introvert extrovert. So I ever feel alone. So once I send the kids off to school and Troy goes to work, I want the house to be completely silent.
Yeah.
So reading books, silence, music, something creative, going for a walk outside, a long, long, long walk alone. Those are the things that refuel me.
Well, one of the things that I think this brings up is just the importance of self-care. You know, if we're going to be good partners with our spouses, or if we're going to be good leaders in our organizations, we've got to start with an appropriate level of self-care. I'm not talking about a self-indulgent, narcissistic self-care, but just exactly what you were talking about, taking care of ourselves. Because when we're emotionally strung out, when we're spiritually desolate, when we're physically tired, mm-hmm. we're in no shape to take care of anyone else.
Absolutely.
And so it's necessary, if we're going to be altruistic, if we're going to be other-centered, that we take care of ourselves so that out of the reserve that we have something to give.
You know, it's interesting because we've gotten a little off topic, and yet I believe that the first step before we can really become our spouse's best friend is to make sure we are the best version of ourselves. So yeah. These things are so critical in order to set us up for that.
Because otherwise you come out of a place of being needy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes on the surface, that looks like you're really trying to be a best friend. And you've probably had a relationship like this. I have too, with friends who you initially think, oh my gosh, they're so committed to serving me. And then you realize there's some other thing that's driving mm-hmm. this that's not healthy.
Yes.
And I really don't want that relationship. It's creepy. Uh-huh. So the same thing happens in a marriage, that if your needs are met, you can't look to your spouse to meet your deepest needs. Mm-hmm. This is a hard lesson for me.
I know. You almost want to leave that sitting there for a minute because we have to absorb that, but that's absolutely true. Because if you go into your relationship thinking your spouse is going to meet every single need you have, you are setting yourself up for huge disappointment.
Yeah. Do you follow the artist David Wilcox at all?
No, I don't.
One of my absolute favorite songwriters. And he's got a song, which I can't think about, or I can't remember the name of, but it's about someone who has a hole in their cup. And it just keeps leaking out that no matter what he tries to do to fill that cup, there's a leak mm-hmm. in the cup. The cup's broken. Mm-hmm. And so until that's repaired, there's not going to be a satisfactory relationship between the two of them.
It's so true.
It's a beautiful song.
So true. So a great place for us to start. And from here, we can really then start talking about how we can become our spouse's best friend. And again, for those who are listening who aren't married, these principles apply to any significant relationship. So if there is a relationship that you are hungry for or you really want to develop, whoever it may be, all these principles can apply to those significant relationships and help you develop mm-hmm. the kind of relationships you really want. So we're gonna provide you today with three steps to become your spouse's best friend, which I can't even believe it's only three. It seems too simple to be true.
I know it does. It probably is, but it at least gets you started.
Absolutely. Okay, so what is that first step?
Well, let me just say that, again, Gail and I have been married for 36 years. I really do regard her as my best friend. I think if you were to ask her without me present, mm-hmm. she would say the exact same thing. We love going on long walks together, spending time together. She's the first person I run to when I've been hurt or... the first person I want counsel from if I'm facing some perplexing situation. Yes. But all the things that you would expect with a best friend, just mm-hmm. that sense of not being alone in the world mm-hmm. and having a true partner.
Yes.
I have that. So the first step I would say is make a list of what you want in a best friend. Now, this sounds a little bit counterintuitive because we're talking about being other-centered, but what do you want in being a best friend? And this is the way I would set it up. If you were going to advertise on Craigslist for a best friend,
let's hope that none of us have to do that, but yes, how would you?
Some people may actually do this, but if you wanted a best friend and you're writing an ad in Craigslist, what would the ad look like? So I actually jotted a few things down here.
Okay, I'm interested to hear this. I want to know what your
Craigslist... Well, you feel free to add in too, because there's probably things that I'm missing here. But so just imagine this ad, wanted best friend. Prospective candidates will make me feel good about being me. Prospective candidates will affirm my best qualities, especially when I'm feeling insecure. Call out the best in me and hold me accountable to the best version of myself. Mm-hmm. Listen without judging or trying to fix me. I'm kind of preaching to myself.
I know. I'm listening to this going, ouch, that's kind of, this is good.
Give me the benefit of the doubt. I want that in a best friend, somebody that doesn't overly react to everything mm-hmm. I do, but gives me the benefit of the doubt. Extends grace to me when I'm grumpy or having a bad day. Gail does this beautifully, by the way. Remembers my birthday, my favorite foods, my music, and art. Knows my story and loves me regardless. Spends time with me just because they enjoy my company. This is a big one. Speaks well of me when I'm not present. Mm-hmm. That's what a best friend does.
Yes.
Serves me with a joyful spirit and without complaining. Speaks the truth to me when no one else will. Never shames me, diminishes me, or makes me feel small. Parenthetically, I see so many couples kind of devolve into that.
Yeah, I do too.
And it's usually under the guise of humor. Mm-hmm.
Or sarcasm, kind of like it's a joke.
Very painful.
Yes.
Very painful, very cutting. Becomes excited about what I'm excited about. And then finally, somebody who celebrates my wins. Like, so if I'm crafting a Craigslist ad for a best friend, this kind of, to me, is my ideal person that I would want for a best friend.
Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty good list, to say.
So is there anything you'd add to it?
Oh, I think you covered it pretty well. And I can't remember if you mentioned this, but I want somebody that can, like, laugh hysterically with me. I want somebody that we love to laugh and find the humor in life. That's something that feeds me a lot. The other would be, and you kind of mentioned this, that kind of overlooks an offense. Mm-hmm. You know, that's so, maybe because I make so many mistakes, but I really want somebody that, you know, is able, like you said, to see the best in me and overlook it when I'm just grumpy or not having the best moment, or I respond inappropriately in a moment, immaturely, and just says, you know, she's so much better than that. I'm just going to overlook this. I'm just going to let this go.
That's really good. Well, if we think back on those moments that we've had with best friends and what were, you know, if we were to deconstruct those, what made those moments that we still remember, what made those relationships, relationships that we wish we could get back to, or we want to preserve at any cost if we have them, fortunate enough to have them. But I think it's a lot of the things that we've been talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Totally. One other thing that I thought of, one other thing I would add or just expand on is this, that they're able to be strong when I'm weak, you know, to pull up courage when I'm feeling afraid, or, you know, the kind of step that you have, that complementary relationship, that when you just don't have any will to just take that next risk or that next step, that they step up and say, you know what, I got enough courage for both of us, and you will do this.
Good.
And I am standing with you. Now, you've got this.
Are you and Troy opposites, or are you similar?
We're very opposite. Well, in certain things. I mean, when it comes to parenting and finances and things that a lot of marriages struggle with, we're very much the same.
So
we're
on the
same
page. Values.
Very much aligned on some of those things. We're very different in personality. Very different in how we kind of respond in relationship and how we interact with people. So those things are very much opposites. But then on the really big, big issues, we seem to be a lot alike.
Yeah, that's good. Well, Gail and I are total opposites too. Like, she's an extrovert, I'm an introvert, literally on every possible thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the Myers-Briggs or any other test, we're like the exact opposites.
In fact, when we started dating, when we were about to get married, there were some people that could not even fathom that we would end up becoming a couple, because we appeared to be so much opposites in so many ways. But I can tell you, we've been married almost 14 years now. And especially after what our family's gone through in the last year, I cannot imagine any other person as my spouse. I mean, he is so perfectly suited to this, to me, and to this phase in life and what I need. I can't even imagine anybody else.
It's almost like God knew.
Oh, yeah. Imagine that. I mean, he really has become my best friend. Now, that doesn't mean we always get along. Let's just be honest.
You fight with your best friends. Uh-huh. There are moments when you doubt one another, or you get hurt by one another. Mm-hmm. But in a best friend kind of relationship, hopefully, you always come back. You realize that there's something at stake here, and that what I usually need is a little perspective. Sometimes that requires distance. But I think it begins, and this is where we go back to this first step, with getting really clear on what you want in a best friend.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, you said this at the beginning, but it sounds self-indulgent. We're sitting there doing that, but there's more to what this is all about. You're going to take us another step further. So we start with that first step, make a list of what you would want in a best friend, which I think is great, because you're being very clear about what you believe it takes to have a successful marriage, a successful relationship.
Yep. And before we get into the second and third one, I think we should take a break.
All right, let's do that. We're going to take a short break, but stick with us. We have so much more to come on how to become your spouse's best friend. We'll be right back.
As a busy and successful blogger, podcaster, author, speaker, and consultant, I'm constantly asked about the tools I use to get it all done. Now, for the first time, I'm going to pull back the curtain and let you peek inside my toolbox to see the software and hardware I use for everything from blogging and podcasting to productivity, social media, and speaking, plus so much more. You can't buy Inside My Toolbox, but you can get it for free. by subscribing to my free email newsletter. When you subscribe, you'll receive my newest content right in your inbox. You'll never have to worry about missing an important post or update again. To get your free copy of the Inside My Toolbox ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. Don't waste any more time or money using the wrong tools. Sign up today at michaelhyatt.com.
All right, today we're talking about how you can become your spouse's best friend. However, even if you aren't married, the concepts we're talking about today would apply to any significant relationship. And the first step that we talked about, the first step that Michael gave to you today is make a list of what you would want in a best friend. So pretend like you're advertising on Craigslist or somewhere else, and you've typed up this ad, wanted, best friend.
Yeah.
And this is what you want. And we've put together, Michael's put together his list. I've added in some of mine. We've got a pretty, it's a pretty tall order.
It's a pretty tall order. But here's where we turn the tables, and this brings us to the second step. Now become that person for your spouse.
So this is step number two.
Step number two.
All right. Become that person for your spouse.
Yeah. So it's turning the table and just saying, okay, you know what it means to be a best friend, at least from your perspective. And by the way, it'd be really helpful to ask your spouse what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would really inform this process even further. But let's just say you're in a relationship where maybe there's distance and you're not best friends, because mm-hmm. I've heard from a lot of people and hear from a lot of people who say, I want that relationship like you and Gail have together. How do I get there? You know, I just don't have it. My spouse and I have nothing in common, to which I say, I don't say this to them right away, but I say, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the compliment of that can be very powerful. It's really, it was difficult for us initially, but once we got past that and began to celebrate the fact that we weren't the same,
mm-hmm.
and it gave us more resources as a couple, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Because when I'm discouraged and down and my introverted self and I'm, you know, wanting to sequester myself away, is that the right word? Is that a verb?
So, yes, it is.
Okay.
We'll just say it
Let's
is.
Say it is.
Who's going to disagree with us at this moment?
Like, I'm thinking of the political side.
No,
of
it is.
You know, she's up. And when there's times when she really wants to go out and be with other people, sometimes that's the very thing I need.
Mm-hmm.
So we've let that work for us. But I do think determining to be, you're going to become the best friend that you wished you had to the other person is one of the fastest ways that you can improve the relationship. Just decide you're going to be all those things. Like I was reading that list. What would it take for me to make her feel good about being
mm-hmm.
her?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you can get into this pattern with a spouse where you kind of think, you know, I like her, but I wish there were a couple things that were different. You know, I wish.
Isn't that the truth? I'm just being honest. Isn't that the truth? We love our spouse, and there's so many, but there's moments where, like, yeah, wouldn't it be nice if they didn't do that? Or,
well, if you're not careful, you can focus on those things and chip away.
It doesn't
and,
take very long.
Well, I'll tell you, my experience is that what you focus on, you'll get more of.
Mm-hmm.
So if all you're focused on is the fact that they're never on time, or you know, they can't keep their house or they can't keep the house or the office space like you want it, or they always seem to be focused on work and not on the family. If you really focus on that, you're going to get more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that there's not a place for having a hard discussion. Sometimes you need that, and Gail's had those hard discussions with me before. But to make the other person feel good about being them and to celebrate their uniqueness.
Yes.
You know, what I didn't discover till about 2 years ago was that Gail really is an artist. And once I realized that, because she started painting, you know, I should have seen this earlier and I should have called this out in her, but I didn't. But she decided she was going to become an artist. And then it was like, wow. All of a sudden,
she's
realized
she's not just an artist. She's excellent.
She's an excellent artist.
Very good.
But suddenly I realized, well, of course she's an artist. And that explains so much of how she thinks about the world, how she interacts mm-hmm. with people. And I love that about her. But I want to make her feel good about that part of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was several years ago now, we decided that we were going to get a housekeeper to help her with the house, because if she were here, I would say this in front of her. It's not her favorite thing. It's not her best thing, you know, keeping house.
It's not really my favorite thing either, just so you know.
And so we were at a place where we could afford to get some help. And she had a real hard time because she felt like she should be better at this than she really is.
Uh-huh.
You know, she should be good at it and she didn't have any excuses and all that. And so my job as a husband was, I just wanted to make her feel good about that. You know, you don't have to be good at everything. What's the highest and best use of you? Mm-hmm. I see you when you're in relationships with other people and encouraging other women, and when you're shepherding, as it were, our daughters
yes.
and all that. I want you to do more of that. I don't want you to be doing things that we could hire mm-hmm. Done that other people actually love and enjoy. And it's not the best and highest use of you. So making her feel good about being her. Or affirming her best qualities. You know, these, again, some of the lists that I referred to earlier, I won't go through all of them, but giving her the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. She's the most consistently positive person I know.
She really is very positive. My husband's the same way. I mean,
really?
Just nothing yeah. gets him down. He's kind of sure and steady. And there are times, you know, there's that times that sure and steady just drives me crazy.
Gets annoying.
Yeah, because you're just like, you know, get excited about something. Jump up and, for yeah. crying out loud, do something. And yet when we are going through a crisis or one of our children is struggling, he is the sure and steady. In fact, I remember when my oldest three boys are all grown and they all drive, but he was the ideal person to teach them how to drive because he was sure and steady. I was the one that had my fingernails in the dashboard. I'm screaming. And my husband
was... down on the floor with your foot exactly. as if there were a break there.
And yet his sure and steady, I mean, it was really his best quality. And as much as there may be times that it frustrates me, I know for a fact that that is a huge gift to our family. And so affirming that, speaking out loud about that
yes.
and letting him know that our family is blessed because he brings that to the table.
But there are probably moments, at least there is in Gail's case, where she's not positive. Again, she's the most consistently positive person I know. Mm-hmm. She's that way 98% of the time, but occasionally she's not. You know, she falls into a funk or whatever. And what a best friend would do is give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
You know, not shame her. This was really hard for me to learn, not try to fix her. You know, really hard to learn with my girls. You know,
yeah, because we want to kind of turn it around. We
yeah.
almost, well, those of us that are achievers, too, can be awful
That's,
at this.
Can
we? Because
yes.
we just want to dive in and fix everything, which is, you know, it's not honoring to the other person, and it's really
That's
not
right.
our job. You know, we sometimes just need to sit back and love them for who they are.
And if you've worked in the corporate world, you're rewarded for fixing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get to
You're not rewarded in marriage when
no.
you try to fix the other. I'm just saying, if anybody is tempted to try to fix their spouse today, just don't.
I remember one time, really one poignant time, when Gail had a particularly rough day with the girls. And I came home and she was sharing with me about what had gone wrong that day. And I immediately tried to fix it. And she just stopped me and just said, look, I don't need a CEO. I need a husband.
Oh,
I need you
okay,
to listen
that's
to
profound.
Me. And so it was really...
Did it stop you like dead in your tracks?
It was like she just slugged me and stopped me dead in my tracks. Uh-huh. And I realized, oh my gosh. So now that actually really helped me because now I can catch myself when I'm going into
yes.
that kind of CEO fix-it mode. And believe me, I still slip into it. But when I'm being the best version of myself and when I'm being a best friend uh-huh. to my wife, I listen. Because what she really needs is empathy. She
yes.
needs to know she's not alone,
mm-hmm.
that she's not abnormal,
mm-hmm.
That she's going to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can affirm in the midst of whatever chaos she's going through, those three things, she's smarter than I am. She's perfectly capable of figuring out how to fix it.
I'm sure
it.
She bounces back even faster if you give her those three
That's
things.
That's right. She'll get to the answer.
You know, there's this whole fallacy of thought that if you feed, like if you show empathy and feed into somebody, or I'm sorry, if you show empathy to what somebody's struggling with, that you're feeding into their negativity, right?
Right?
There's this
right.
kind of thought that, well, I don't want to feed into their negativity, so I need to be positive and pull them back. But that's
yeah.
so not true.
So not true.
When you validate a person, you actually, it's kind of like lifting the pot off of a boiling kettle. You just let some of the steam out.
That's
and you
right.
actually give them more strength and power and ability to be able to overcome it themselves.
That's right. Now I should say that there are probably relationships in people who are neurotic or whatever.
Yes.
And I'm not a psychologist. But I've known people that, like David Wilcox sings about, who have a crack in the cup, so to speak.
True,
and there's
true.
Nothing you can do. I mean, if you kind of give them an inch, they take a mile, and
true.
They just go on. Because what's really driving that is they need the significance of being noticed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's just hurts you're not going to fix. But for most normal relationships,
most, yes.
mm-hmm. this is hugely helpful.
All right. So far we've talked through the first two steps of how to become your spouse's best friend. The first is make a list of what you would want in a best friend. The second is now become that person for your spouse. We already said it's a tall order, but now guess what? It's our order. We have to, I mean, you're really challenging us to sit there and say, okay, if you want this from them, then you have to be willing to go first and do it yourself.
Yep.
What's that third step?
Third step is keep sowing the seeds until the relationship blossoms. Now, this depends on where you are in the relationship,
mm-hmm.
because some people are a little bit slower to respond. Some people will be quick to respond. Mm-hmm. But if you've got, you know, years and years of hurt and misunderstanding and suspicion and all of that, I mean, first of all, even in the best situation, you don't get from not knowing that other person to being a best friend just because you make a decision and say, oh, yeah, you're going to be my best friend.
It doesn't work that way.
From this point forward, we're going to be buddies. No, you have to sow into those relationships. It takes sometimes months,
years. I'm going to say my best relationships have been developed over years. Yeah. It just doesn't, you can't fast forward that.
And it doesn't end.
Mm-mm.
I still, even as we're talking about this, I feel convicted about there are so many other ways that I could be a better friend to Gail.
Mm-hmm.
And this challenges me to do that. But you have to keep sowing the seeds until the relationship blossoms. And I think, again, and not in every case, and there'll be people that will write to us and say, well, you don't understand my husband, or you don't understand my wife, mm-hmm. or I've tried to do this for years, or, you know, whatever. Fine. Mm-hmm. You know, in those situations, I'd say get outside help.
Yes, absolutely. If you're in a place where you're stuck and nothing's working, then invite outside help. I've been there, done that before.
Yeah.
You've done that before. I mean, yeah. The point of this is not to say that it's easy. It certainly is not.
That's
but this
right.
is a great place to start. And if you have exhausted all your efforts and you aren't seeing any progress, then just get help. It's not impossible. I've seen impossible situations turn around.
I have too. And at the very least, I think in a healthy relationship, it's good to periodically read books on marriage.
Yeah, I agree.
Because again, this keeps the vision alive. It gives you new tools. And whatever else marriage is, there are times when you just need tools to get better at it. One of the things Gail and I have done a couple times in our marriage is gone to a marriage conference, you know, where we've mm-hmm. spent a weekend or a week together just focused on building our relationship. But there's been times, there was a time after we'd been married for about 5 years when it just wasn't working. We never out loud talked about divorce, mm-hmm. but both of us were thinking about it. And we decided to get outside help, and we went to a counselor,
uh-huh.
To a therapist. And to be really honest, I'll tell you what happened is I really thought it was her problem. And so I sent her to a therapist. I said, I think you need help on uh-huh. this. And so I don't know that I've ever shared this publicly, but for several weeks she's going and she's dutifully going. And,
uh-huh.
and so one day I just said, well, how's it going? And she said, well, his name is Dr. Pannebecker. And he said, Dr. Pannebecker wants you to come into my next appointment.
What'd you do? Oh, no.
I said, what do I have to do with this? I mean, it's kind of a man
thing to say.
I'm
only laughing because anybody who's been married for any amount of time has probably been in a similar kind of situation where you really think it's the other person and you come to find out, maybe not.
Well, I really, this created a lot of anxiety on my part.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I thought, I think honestly, somewhere deep in my heart, I thought I'm about to be exposed.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't willing to admit that even to my conscious mm-hmm. mind. So I remember going into that counseling apartment, sitting down. He was very cordial. And so I remember he asked me this question after a while. I don't know what all the small talk was before this, but he said, why are you so driven? And
now,
I literally burst into tears.
Oh.
Because it's like, you know, I'm caught.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm,
well, he really
I'm,
hit the heart of the
he did.
The heart of the issue that quickly.
So then we spent several weeks unpacking that.
Uh-huh.
And as it turned out, Gail had her issues to deal with, but
we all do.
Far
Absolutely.
More fundamental to the condition of our marriage was the fact that I was basically checked out
mm-hmm.
and that I was giving my best energy, my best focus, my best time to my work and not to the relationship.
Mm.
And that was hugely helpful. Not the last time we would deal with this
yes.
issue, for sure, but it was a starting point. And I was so grateful that we went in for counseling.
Oh, yes.
And I would really encourage people who are listening
mm-hmm.
to this, if you're in a relationship that is not what you want it to be, don't settle. Don't resign yourself mm-hmm. to this is as good as it's going to get. You know, I know that for some people, they'll read books and they'll go to conferences and they'll do therapy and they're mm-hmm. still not going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But use every resource at your disposal and do everything you can. It's so worth it. Because if you can get to that place where you're really, truly your spouse's best friend.
Yes. The rewards.
Oh, it's invaluable.
It's just, I mean, it's just It's so worth it. It's uncomfortable, the process of getting there, and you do have to swallow your pride, and you have to be willing to learn, and you have to kind of be vulnerable, open yourself up. It's risky. It feels so risky.
That's right.
But the rewards on the other side are more than worth it if you're willing to push through.
So true.
All right, so today we've talked about how to become your spouse's best friend. We've given you three different steps. One, make a list of what you would want in a best friend. Two, now become that person for your spouse. Three, keep sowing the seeds until the relationship blossoms. And really, this is just simply the golden rule. There's a biblical verse in Luke that says, do to others what you would have them do to you. I mean, that's really what it is.
If I forget everything else, remember that.
Remember
and
that.
And you'll be good.
And we've kind of simplified it. Of course, there's other things in marriage, things like communication and romance and all... like managing conflict, there's a lot of other things, but this is really foundational to dealing with anything else. And if we can kind of turn the tables and start becoming what we need to the other person, it really can jumpstart your relationship and head it in the right direction.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, if you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all the show notes and a full transcript of the entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you'd prefer to watch rather than just listen, we have the whole video posted at michaelhyatt.com as well. And could you do us a favor? We would love for you to head over to iTunes and rate the show. This is huge for us, and it's really the only way to get this content into as many hands as possible. We'd really appreciate it. Any final thoughts on this topic, Michael?
You know, I think we've said everything about this that I want to say. I would just say, again, to reiterate, it's so worth it. Don't let this moment pass. Mm-hmm. Resolve that you're going to be your spouse's best friend and see what happens. And I'd love to hear from people in the comments.
I would too.
What they think about this topic and where their relationship's at and where they hope it can be in a couple of years.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for being with us today. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters.